sands of time are sinking, the dawn of heaven breaks, the summer morn I sigh for, the fair sweet morn awakes. Dark, dark hath been the midnight, but day spring is at hand, and glory, glory dwelleth in Emmanuel's land. O Christ, He is the fountain, the deep sweet well of love. Streams on earth I've tasted, more deep I'll drink above. There to an ocean fullness His mercy doth extend, and glory, glory
Welcome to another Bible lesson brought to you by the Hamilton Church of Christ. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, there hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. Here we learn that Christians have a way to escape from temptation. Any temptation we have, it's a temptation that other people have had before us. It's common to man, and God will make a way to escape. So if we just look for that way that God has made for us to escape, then we can not have to go through the terrible sin that goes with temptation. We invite you to join us today in our Bible study. As we continue our study in the book of Genesis, we're still in the 18th chapter. In our last lesson, we had gotten through the 22nd verse. The context for this passage is that Abraham has been visited by the two angels and the Lord. They have been given the hospitality of Abraham and Sarah, and they've confirmed again to Abraham and Sarah the fact that Sarah would bear a son next year, and the promise was going to be fulfilled. But the second part of their mission was they were going to have to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plains. So as the angels started toward Sodom, looked toward Sodom, Abraham walked along with them, and God let Abraham know that that was what their mission was. And so we have Abraham now interceding for these cities, interceding for Sodom. And so beginning with verse 23 of chapter 18, we'd like to read verses 23 through 33. And Abraham drew near and said, Wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That be forth me to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked. That be far from thee, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And the Lord said, If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes. And Abraham answered and said, Behold now, I have taken on me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. Peradventure there shall lack 5 of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for lack of 5? And he said, If I find there 40 and 5, I will not destroy it. And he spake unto him yet again, and said, Peradventure there be 40 found there. And he said, I will not do it for 40's sake. And he said unto him, O let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Peradventure there shall be 30 be found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, Behold now, I've taken speak unto the Lord. Peradventure 20 found there. And he said, I will start for 20's sake. He said, O let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet, but this winter 10 shall be found. And he said, I will not do it for 10's sake. And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place. This passage is a very remarkable passage. It is the first intercessory prayer recorded in the Bible. It is a prayer for the sparing of Sodom. We should consider this to be an example of how we are to pray for others. This prayer came after God had spoken to Abraham. Today, God speaks to us by His Word, and His Word should cause us to want to pray and tell us what to pray about. Verse 23 says, Abraham drew near. Abraham drew near to God. He felt that God would hear him. He believed it was proper for him to approach God in prayer. Abraham must have thought to himself, Shall Sodom be destroyed, and I not speak one word in its favor? We must remember that when we pray, we're drawing near to God, and this is the time for solemn respect for God. Abraham's prayer was made on behalf of all the 5 cities of the plain. And it seems that Zoar was spared completely being annihilated, since we read of it years later. Abraham was greatly displeased with the wickedness of those cities. He did not desire to live in that kind of environment, but he had a deep concern for the people. And though sin is to be hated and abhorred, yet sinners are to be pitied and prayed for. God does not delight in their punishment, nor should we desire bad things to happen to them. Abraham begins his prayer with a request that the righteous among them might be spared and not suffer the same punishment as the sinners would suffer. He no doubt had an eye to Lot and his family. He held no grudge against Lot, even though Lot took the first choice of the land. This was proven when Abraham rescued Lot from the kings by the sword and is now attempting to rescue him by prayer. Abraham requests that all be spared if 50 righteous persons could be found, verse 24. God recognized this request by answering, If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes, verse 26. We must pray not only for ourselves, but for others. This is a prayer of great faith. Abraham believes that God can agree to his petition. James 5:16 says, The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Abraham prays that God not destroy the righteous with the wicked. Verse 23, Wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Verse 25, That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked. That be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? We must never classify God's righteous as being like the wicked. We give honor to the righteous. Romans 12:10 says, In honor, preferring one another. The righteous are mingled with the wicked in this world. Amongst the best there may be some bad, and amongst the worst there may be some good. Even in Sodom, there was just Lot. Even though the righteous may necessarily be mixed with the wicked, surely God will not destroy the righteous with the wicked. Though in this world the righteous may suffer some of the same afflictions of the wicked, yet in the great day of the judgment a distinction will be made. Verse 25 says that the righteous should be as the wicked, that be far from thee. Common calamities are looked upon differently by the righteous than they are by the wicked. Verse 25 says, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? God is the judge of all the earth. He gives his law to all, he sees all, and he will pass sentence upon all. God never did, nor ever will, do wrong to any of his creatures, either by withholding that which is right, or by requiring more than is right. In Job 34, 10 through 12, therefore hearken unto me, ye men of understanding. Far be it from God that he should do wickedness, and from the Almighty that he should commit iniquity. For the work of a man shall he render unto him, and cause every man to find according to his ways. Yea, surely God will not do wickedly, neither will the Almighty pervert judgment. We should note here that Abraham recognized that God was not only the God that he had followed from Ur to Canaan, and who had promised to build a great nation through him, but that he was still the judge of all the earth. Abraham's concept of God was certainly not that of a tribal God, as many mistaken critics have taught. There is only one God, and this God is judge of all the earth, and God will do right. We see Abraham's great humility, even though he's talking with God. Verse 27, he says, behold, I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. Abraham seems to be amazed at his own boldness. He's speaking to the Lord, the greatest of all things, all beings, the Creator, the Master, the Judge of all the earth, but he, Abraham, is dust and ashes. The greatest of all men, the most honorable, the most deserving, the most praiseworthy, are but dust and ashes, lowly and vile before God, despicable, frail, and dying. Whenever we draw near unto God, it is appropriate for us to acknowledge the vast distance there is between us and God. He is the Lord of glory. We are the dust and ashes of the earth. The access we have to the throne of glory and grace and the freedom of speech we've been given to God are certainly matters we are struck in awe of. 2 Samuel 7:18, then went King David in and sat before the Lord, and he said, who am I, O Lord God, and what is my house that thou hast brought me hitherto? Yet Abraham also shows an awful dread of God's anger. Verse 30, he says, oh, let not the Lord be angry. If we had to deal with a man who knew all about us like God does, we would be fearful of his anger. But we're dealing with God in our prayers and not man. And although he has great power and he abhors sin, he is not angry with the prayers of the righteous. Proverbs 15:8, the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. Yet Abraham could see that he was interceding with God to alter his plan for Sodom, and so he wanted to be very careful that he not provoke the Lord to anger and displeasure. But we also see here that Abraham, in addition to having this respect for God, had a feeling of love for his fellows. As bad as Sodom was, he thought there were several good people in it. It's a mark of high character when we look for the best in others. It is better for us to think good of the bad than for us to think bad of the good. Abraham used all of his influence with God to intercede for Sodom. We never find him using this much persuasion for himself or for his own family as he used here for Sodom. Abraham shows boldness and confidence in his opinion of Sodom. Abraham named the number. If there be 50 righteous people in Sodom, will you spare it? God agrees to spare it if 50 righteous are found. But Abraham keeps bartering with God. What if there are 5 less? What about 45? Will you destroy it for 45? God agrees that he'll spare it if there be 45 righteous. But Abraham does not stop. What if there are 40 righteous? God agrees, I'll not destroy it if 40 are found. Abraham continues, what if 30 righteous are found? God again agrees to spare it. If 30 righteous are found. But Abraham persists, what if 20 are found? God again agrees, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. But Abraham comes back one more time, what if 10 are found? God said, I'll not destroy it for 10's sake. So Abraham knew that there were at least 10 members of Lot's family. There was lots of two married daughters and their husbands, and then his two unmarried daughters and his two sons and he and his wife. So he felt at least there would be 10 righteous, not realizing that even some of Lot's own family would not be considered to be righteous. So verse 33 says, "And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place." Our communication with God in this world are not constant. God did not go away until Abraham had said all he wanted to say. God never wearies of hearing prayer. Isaiah 59:1, "Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened, that it cannot save, neither is his ear heavy, that it cannot hear." So the Bible says Abraham returned to his place. Not filled with pride for the favors granted by God, he returned to wait and see what the event would be. And it showed that his prayer was heard. Yet God was not spared because there were not 10 righteous in it. We learn to expect much from God and little from man. God did his part, but man didn't do his part. So that concludes chapter 18 of Genesis. We'd now like to move into chapter 19. And as we're ready to begin chapter 19, we'd like to note that the Apostle Peter comments on this 19th chapter. 2 Peter 2, 6-8, "And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds." Before getting into this 19th chapter of Genesis, let's look at Lot's circumstance. The scene now shifts to Sodom itself, the chief and example city of the five cities of the plain. It was to Sodom that Lot and his family gradually moved. They were drawn like a baby to the edge of a cliff. He first pitched his tent towards Sodom, Genesis 13:12, then dwelt in Sodom, Genesis 14:12, then finally sat in the gate of Sodom, Genesis 19:1. The gate of a city was the place where the business and commercial activities of the city centered, and also where the judicial council of the city took place. Quite likely, Lot himself was now in some kind of a city official or a magistrate of the place, for that seems to be the meaning of the term sitting in the gate. However, it could simply mean that he liked to sit at the city gate, where he could easily take part in the conversation and trade that thrived there. However, Lot presents to us a rather discouraging picture. Here was a man who had participated in one of the highest callings ever given by God to man, and who had been with Abraham to experience great revelations and deliverance by God from difficult situations. Yet, Lot now was seemingly right at home in the midst of the life of one of the wickedest cities that ever shamed the earth. Lot was well aware of the wickedness of the city before he went there. He had pitched his tent towards Sodom. He knew it before he began to actually dwell there. We just read where Peter in 2 Peter 2:8 says, "That righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds." So why did Lot stay among them? We do not read of him trying to teach them in any way in order to turn them back to God away from their sins. It is quite possible that he was satisfied that he could do so well in the business, commercial, and political affairs of this life as a godly man living in an ungodly crowd. Such a combination of interests is just like playing Russian roulette with one's own soul. Eventually, there will be a terrible price to pay. We may lose any family, and we may lose our own. Lot here is a picture of a modern-day person who claims to be a Christian. He thinks he has the best of both worlds, the eternal benefits of knowing his Savior, but also the temporal benefits that come from worldly influence and worldly possessions. And as a bonus, he has the acceptance by and fellowship with men of the world. The gross wickedness of the worldly people may vex his soul. He may not want to enter into all of their activities, but in general he gets along with them very well and has no apparent conflict with their worldly ways. But a day of reckoning is coming. So we now move into chapter 19 of Genesis, and we'd like to read the first three verses. "And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, Behold, now, my lord, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early, and go on your ways. And they said, Nay, but we will abide in the street all night. And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house. And he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. As Lot sat sitting at the gate of Sodom, the two angels that had left Abraham approached the city about sundown. When Lot saw them, he rose up to meet them. Lot evidently saw something in these men that was very different from the general society of Sodom. He showed them great respect. He bowed himself with his face toward the ground, verse 1. It seemed that he was the only one to offer them hospitality. The very nature of these two men would not be compatible with the average Sodomite, but Lot well knew the kind of treatment such strangers received in Sodom. He moved quickly to try to shield them from such abuse by taking them into his own house. They at first declined Lot's invitation. This may have been out of politeness, but it may have been a test to see how really sincere Lot was. But Lot knew that spending the night on the streets of Sodom was very unwise, so he pressed upon them greatly, and they agreed to stay. Lot had promised them a place to stay all night at his house. They could wash their feet and rise up early and go on their way. Lot was entertaining angels unawares. When the men entered his home, Lot prepared them a feast. It is significant that the only ingredient of this feast that is mentioned is unleavened bread. The fact that Lot baked the bread rather than his wife may suggest that his wife did not welcome these strangers in her home. But it's very interesting that this is the first mention of leaven in the Bible. In the Bible, leaven is generally a symbol of evil doctrine or practice corrupting God's people. The next mention of leaven in the Bible is when the Passover feast was instituted, when God's people were specifically instructed to observe the feast without leaven. And as a matter of fact, they were to put away all leaven out of their houses, Exodus 12:15. It is significant that here at the first mention of leaven, the absence of leaven is associated symbolically with the spiritual fellowship with a remnant of believers and their God in the midst of totally corrupt society. Much like small groups of faithful worshipers may be today, leaven is involved with the fermentation process and is a perfect symbol of the breakdown that occurs with decay and corruption. It is important that spiritual fellowship not be contaminated with it. Now, verses 4 through 11 of chapter 19. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot and said unto him, Where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them. And Lot went out at the door unto them, and shut the door after him, and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold, now I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and you do to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. And they said, Stand back. And they said again, This one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them? And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door, but the men put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut to the door. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. Here we get a look at the terrible degree of sin at Sodom, but also the involvement of nearly every person in this terrible corrupt state. Certainly the cry against Sodom should have been loud and long. They were all wicked. Wickedness had become universal, and they were all together in their vile purpose. Here were young and old, and all from every quarter engaged in this riot. Either they had no law and authority to keep the peace, or the law allowed for such behavior. When the disease of sin has become an epidemic, it is fatal to any place. Isaiah 1:4-7, Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel to anger, they are gone away backwards. why should you be stricken any more? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart is faint. From the sole of the foot even to the head there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence, and it is desolate as overthrown by strangers. Here Isaiah speaking of the condition of the nation of Judah before God brought the great judgment of the Babylonian captivity upon it. In this passage in Genesis, the impending judgment is on Sodom, and Sodom has the same type of condition. Well, in our next lesson, we'll continue with this story. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
Once I stood in the night with my head bowed low in the darkness as black as could be, and my heart felt alone, and I cried, oh Lord, don't hide your face from me. Hold my hand all the way, every hour, every day, from here to the great unknown. Take my hand, let me stand where no one stands alone. Like a king I may riches to call my own, but I don't know a thing in this whole wide world that's worse than being alone.
Hold my hand
And so Jesus Christ came to magnify it. He came to make it honorable. He showed respect to it in his life. He didn't violate the law all the time that he was here. He taught that it was to be kept until it was fulfilled, and it was fulfilled in his life. He died to show that God was determined to inflict the penalty of the law on sinners. So this is a way of fulfilling and establishing the law and not making the law void. So the plan of justification by faith leads to actually a respect for the law of God. It leads to a person having a greater feeling for the meaning of the law because he realizes that his sin is something not to be taken lightly. His sin must require the shed blood of Christ in order to take care of it. So instead of faith making the law void and null, faith actually does establish the law. The sinner sees the evil of his transgression. He sees the respect which God has shown to the law. He gives his heart to God, and as a result of his faith, he yields himself to obey the law of God. And so all of his views then are toward having more respect for the law, of realizing the sacredness of the law that God has.